Liszt began to play. The demon began to flex his muscles. There's that demon reference again. It's as if perfectly sane correspondents needed to attribute some sort of devilish character or Faustian bargain to Liszt's seemingly otherworldly playing. Back to Schumann. The demon began to flex his muscles. He first played along with the audience as if to feel them out and then give them a taste of something more substantial until, with his magic, he had ensnared each and every one and could move them this way or that as he chose. It is unlikely that any other artist, excepting only Paganini, has the power to lift, carry, and deposit an audience to such a high degree. In listening to Liszt, we are overwhelmed by an onslaught of sounds and sensations. In a matter of seconds, we have been exposed to tenderness, daring, fragrance, madness. The instrument glows and sparkles under the hands of its master. This has all been described 100 times, but it has to be heard and seen to be believed, unquote. In Russia, the critics were not at first disposed to like Liszt at all. The St. Petersburg critic Vladimir Stasov, clearly a show-me sort of guy, wrote in his memoirs, and we quote, Liszt was wearing a white cravat and various orders and medals jangled from the lapels of his frock coat. He was very thin and stooped. I did not find his face handsome at all. I at once strongly disliked this mania for decorations and had as little liking for the saccharine, courtly manner Liszt affected with everyone he met. But most startling of all was his enormous mane of fair hair. In those days, no one in Russia would have dared wear his hair that way. It was strictly forbidden. Instead of using the steps onto the stage, he leaped onto the platform. He tore off his white kid gloves and tossed them on the floor under the piano. Then, after bowing low in all directions to a tumult of applause such as probably never been heard in St. Petersburg, he seated himself at the piano. He played the William Tell Overture, the Andante from Lucia, his fantasy on Mozart's Don Giovanni, piano transcriptions of Schubert's Stanchion and Erlkönig, Beethoven's Adelaide, and in conclusion, his own Galop Chromatique. He played, and our misgivings shrank to meaningless insignificance. We had never in our lives heard anything like this. We had never been in the presence of such brilliant, passionate, demonic temperament. At one moment rushing like a whirlwind, at another pouring forth cascades of tender beauty and grace, Liszt's playing was absolutely overwhelming, unquote. Oh, one more. Henry Reeves, an Englishman who heard Liszt play in Paris, leaves us with a description of the sort of concert-ending feint that Liszt would occasionally stage in order to keep his audiences on their toes. And again, we quote, I saw Liszt's countenance assume that agony of expression mingled with radiant smiles of joy, which I never saw on any other face except in the paintings of our Savior. His hands rushed over the keys. The floor on which I sat shook like a wire, and the whole audience were wrapped in sound, when suddenly the hand in the frame of the artist gave way. He fainted into the arms of the friend who was turning pages for him and carried out off the stage he was. The effect of this scene was really dreadful. The whole room sat breathless with fear till Hiller came forward and announced that Liszt was already restored to consciousness and was comparatively well again. As I handed Madame de Surcout to her carriage, we both trembled like poplar leaves, and I tremble scarcely less as I write this. Unquote. Liszt as archetype. More than anyone before him, more than Beethoven, Byron, Paganini, it was Liszt who created one of the most enduring archetypes of the Romantic era, that of the artiste who walks with God and brings down fire from heaven in order to kindle the hearts of humankind. In Lecture 1, we discussed the fact that Liszt did indeed consider himself superior to the aristocrats and kings and queens he met over the years, believing, as an enlightened member of the post-industrial revolution middle class, believing that his nobility came from within, from his God-given talent and artistic sacrifice, and not from a lucky accident of birth. Oh, Liszt had titles and medals coming out of the proverbial wazoo. He loved them. And the reason why he loved them is that he believed he had earned them. The Cross of the Lion from Belgium, the title Cavalier of the Order of Carlos III, the order's cross encrusted with diamonds, personally given to him by Queen Isabel of Spain, the Order of Nichan Iftikhar, also covered with diamonds, awarded to him by the Abdul Majid Khan, the Sultan of Turkey, the order pour le mérite.